You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 29th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and we are back after 2 weeks, and I'm here with Dante Guarneri, who is back across the pond. How are you doing, Dante?
I still feel like I'm in the pond, swimming, drowning maybe. The jet lag is still very much affecting my day-to-day, but I'm happy to be back right before the finals, of course.
Right. It's exciting, and that if you were wondering why we hadn't put one out in a while, it's because of those travel, I guess you could say, restrictions, but you had a great time. I'm still surviving on the other coast here. And it's finally time for the finals after 8 days off. I'm very excited. First game is tomorrow. We're recording this Wednesday morning or Wednesday midday. So I'm really hyped to get this going and finally start watching some actual basketball and stop seeing every website put out the same three or four articles.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think everyone has had similar takes as far as what this means for LeBron, what this means for the Warriors, and it's kind of tiring. I'm ready for basketball to start.
Absolutely, and I think that where we have to start is talking with about just how the Cavs approach the series and on the court specifically before we kind of get into what it all means for LeBron's legacy and just how they might try and handle this Warriors team that is going to cause them a lot of problems. Believe it or not, switching out Kevin Durant for Harrison Barnes is going to pose some problems. LeBron's going to have to work on the defensive end in this series because I assume he'll draw that matchup for most of the time. Otherwise, the Cavs are going to get lit up by Durant. I think a fully healthy Steph Curry poses some problems for them as to how much defense Kyrie can play. He showed that he's been able to do it in the past. He amps up his defense in the playoffs because he actually starts trying. And then J.R. Smith is going to have to keep Klay from getting hot because he hasn't been hot the entire playoffs. And I think that's going to be really important that he doesn't win them one game like he has in the past.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also will come down to the big men and how well, I guess, Kevin Love can play. Obviously, we've seen it basically the entire postseason. He's done well from three, shooting 48% compared to just 37% in the regular season. But I think it's really up to him to be able to bang up down low, rebounding wise, as well as really his defense. How does he fit into these matchups? I think that's something that could be concerning when they do bring out that death lineup. He'll probably end up drawing some coverage on Iggy, and it kind of forces the Cavs into a weird spot as far as being able to keep him on the court, especially given his somewhat slow defensive rotations.
Yeah, and that's, I think, whether he's able to stay in front of switches and how effectively they're able to rotate is going to be really important because they would ideally like to play their two bigs, Love and Thompson, and because if you're not able to play them and they're forced out of the ball game, or at least one of them is, then one of your four best players isn't playing. And that's just, I don't think that's going to win you the series. I think you're not, the Cavs aren't going to win if they're forced to play the Warriors style of basketball. And then once they go to the bench, they just have to stay alive because a lot of those bench guys who have been hitting all those threes earlier in the playoffs haven't been forced into this many defensive problems because most teams off the bench don't have players of the stature of Iguodala, who we're not sure if he's completely healthy, so that's going to be a big key, and Livingston and JaVale McGee, a couple David West minutes. But those players are better than your typical bench lineup groups, and most teams aren't able to keep at least Klay Thompson and Draymond Green on the floor with every bench unit like the Warriors are.
Yeah, I guess it'll be interesting. I don't see why maybe at least in the first couple games, given how much rest they've had, why they even really need to go to McGee, to even Zaza for that long. I wonder if they'll be able to keep that lineup as long as they can, since that since they've had this rest and Iggy's had the time to get informed. The entire team really has had the time to get informed. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing these guys push 30-35 minutes at least, and a lot of their bench guys probably fall under. I've heard a lot lately of them just maybe going to seven-man rotation. Obviously, tightening it up makes sense given how much rest they've had this entire playoffs, really.
Yeah, I think the majority of their minutes will be played by even just six guys, but you will get about half the game probably taken up by Zaza and JaVale, I'd say, and then maybe the other half with Draymond at the five, but that might be a little much to extend him and their quote-unquote death lineups, which almost always consist of him at the five. But he does have the advantage of having Kevin Durant next to him, who's a much better rim protector and defender than Harrison Barnes is, and he's a better rebounder, so it helps you be able to extend that lineup even longer. And the Warriors are just they will have great defensive players out there the whole time, whereas the Cavs don't always have that luxury. They have to play LeBron and Tristan Thompson a lot, who are their two best defenders. JR has to step up because he's shown it in the past. There was actually an interesting article wrote by Chris Herring, who's a former New Yorker. Now he writes for 538. He wrote an article about how JR Smith is actually more effective guarding the number one option versus the number two. And
that's,
I think,
so
that
J.R.
just
Smith.
Yeah, it's just because his lack of focus, I guess, even though it's been better in Cleveland and he hasn't been going out to the nightlife. But he just seems to thrive in that role, and Klay Thompson isn't the number one guy, so he just has to stay attached.
To be fair, you look back at the two games that they played in the regular season, both of which J.R. Smith wasn't available for, and you look who really was the top performer. Obviously, Kevin Durant played a big role in the first one and still in the second, but it was Klay Thompson had 41 minutes in that first one, that the Christmas Day game that was really a classic. Klay Thompson had 24 points in that one and then followed it up with a 26-point performance, going 5 of 11 from 3. In a way, he could really be the number one given the matchups. You got Kyrie on Steph and LeBron taking on Durant, but it really falls on one of the role players of Cleveland and not one of their stars to face Klay Thompson. And that way, it's almost as if he is their number one option.
Yeah, he's gonna get worked through a maze of screens, and hopefully he figures his way out of it. And as for the other members of that offense, I think seeing Steph Curry fully healthy in the finals, and I personally hope, because I don't like this narrative that's going on, that he does perform at his normal regular season level, because him getting overanalyzed, I guess you could say, in terms of how he's performed in the past two finals is kind of tough to watch after he's been so spectacular, even the last three regular seasons, where this year he probably would have been first team all NBA if there weren't two historic seasons at the guard positions.
Yeah, I don't know if he's had, I can't really back this up right now, but I'd imagine that he didn't have as great of a playoff run as he's had in these playoffs. And, he's got 29 points per game throughout these playoffs, probably playing his best postseason in his career. So I don't know if he's a very streaky guy. If he's able to maintain that level throughout the finals, I find it hard for anyone to stop this team. Just a quick thing, I always think of this when Cleveland ends up playing Golden State. Now, obviously, seeing it for the third time, it's crazy that Kevin Love is someone whenever Cleveland plays someone else, he's really the X factor. He's kind of the guy that extends the offense, makes it difficult for teams to guard the Cavs. But when it comes to Golden State, don't you think they'd rather have Andrew Wiggins for this series? I think he would have been the perfect fit given the matchups in this one. And like I was saying before, you know, Klay Thompson is really that guy, and that could have been Wiggins guarding him. And not to say that Smith isn't capable, but surely you'd want to have that longer defender.
Well, the thing, I think maybe, well, it's tough to say that right now because Kevin Love's playing the best he's played in Cleveland right now.
Absolutely.
But probably at this point going forward, you'd rather have him. But imagine those last two finals where he's a rookie and a second year player going into this matchup. I feel like he wouldn't have been able to handle that stage. And I don't know. The matchup would be so much different if Wiggins was there. I think he'd probably end up just being a more solid player. He'd fit into his role better because in Minnesota he can do basically whatever he wants. He'd be more of a role player in Cleveland, obviously. But that would be interesting because then the Cavs small ball lineup would look a lot like the Warriors small ball, and that would be really fun to watch. I'm surprised you didn't bring up Anthony Bennett in there. What about him?
Anthony Bennett would be great if we were looking for the worst version of Draymond Green to play against Draymond Green. But luckily we don't even have to really think of Bennett. I just, in my mind, Wiggins, you know, for as much as his defense has been talked about, kind of against this Warriors team just kind of completely changes the way Cleveland could go about defending and everything. And obviously it's just hypothetical, but it's interesting to think about, just given even especially how Kevin Love has performed leading up to these finals. It's really going to come down to how he performs in the finals that matters, and that'll be what's remembered. I find it, you know, he only played the 16 minutes in the most recent game that we saw in the regular season. He had some back soreness; he had to leave. But before that, he was 1 for 6 from the field. He had only had 3 points. He struggled offensively and defensively. And even last year, we saw where he really struggled to find his niche defensively. I don't know. That's the one thing that concerns me. I think he could be the X factor at once, and also the biggest reason why Cleveland can't overcome this team.
He's going to be a very interesting piece. Whether he's played off the court or not is going to be really important. You might see him. He's a guy that I would think that they take out in that first round of subs, maybe 6 minutes into the game, and he runs a lot against the bench just so that maybe he can avoid those matchups. For me, a kind of matchup-y thing like that I'm very intrigued to see that I think might turn the series is going to be whether Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green hit threes, because Iguodala has really struggled this postseason from three-point land. The Draymond Green has been fine from there, but it's just his shot, I don't know, every time it goes up, I'm kind of nervous about whether it's going in. It's just not the prettiest thing to look at. I know he's been a very good shooter, and that's a big part of their offense. But if they can hit shots, especially when Durant and Steph Curry come off their pick and rolls, I think that's going to be very crucial. And just how many pick and rolls the Warriors are going to kind of set, because they did have the fewest amount of pick and rolls in the regular season. They love their off-ball screens, but I think ultimately there's a reason everyone in the NBA runs this play so much. It's because it works, and the Warriors might have the most lethal version of it in Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, which they haven't really gone too much, but they might just be saving it for this series and to get their revenge.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. I think a good drinking game for this would be how many every time Kyrie and LeBron and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant do.
Oh boy, you I don't know how long that's dangerous. You're making it.
Yeah, that's you're looking to be out by halftime then. But yeah, I think that those two couplets are certainly the most fascinating offensive duos in that they could both just dominate in so many different ways on those pick and rolls.
Right. And we're seeing Kyrie playing so efficiently right now. That end of that Eastern Conference Finals, he was unbelievable. So if he's hot, it's gonna be something to watch. And it's been such a long run up to these series. Finally talking about it is good, and I'm very excited for it to happen. The other matchup that I think is gonna deem very important is the coaching matchup, because it does not sound like Steve Kerr will be there at least for game one. Sounds like it'll be Mike Brown. And then Ty Lue, his second time around, and just how he handles that. And if Mike Brown coaches the whole series, all three of these finals matchups will have had different coaching matchups, which is kind of funny considering that it's been the same two teams in the championship for 3 years.
I think that might tell you maybe that it doesn't matter that much who's there. I think I've been trying to find an interesting storyline or perspective behind Mike Brown coming to meet LeBron in the finals, but I really do just think it comes down to the talent on the court. Even as we were talking about the screening by the Warriors, I don't think anything changes. If anything, Mike Brown maybe has an earpiece to talk with to Steve Kerr throughout the games, and just to tell him keep telling him to set the off-ball screens. But besides that, it's hard to imagine either one. I think we've even said it on here. You know, LeBron James is really the de facto coach of this of this team. So it makes me wonder if it does matter at all.
Right, and you can see Mike Brown, he's not as good of a coach as Steve Kerr, and he's trying to balance this thing where he wants to coach like Steve, but he wants to do it his own way, and I bet Steve Kerr at home is sometimes like, no, don't do your own thing, this isn't going to end well, but because Steve Kerr feels like he's got the team figured out, and he doesn't want Mike Brown's sometimes idiocy to screw it up.
I would love to see LeBron ends up bumping into Mike Brown again. That would be a gift for the ages, I think.
That would, and that would be good for sure. And as for Ty Lue, I don't know. There's not much. I feel like he's just going to be there wearing his baggy suits.
I like that he's really started to kind of step into this new media role where he's calling out other teams, his own team, kind of saying anything.
Yeah, his job's harder than the Warriors. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, the guy kind of says what's on his mind. I appreciate that, but you know how much he
can
matters.
Do whatever he wants.
Yeah, he could, as long as LeBron says it's okay.
Yeah, you got to get your parents' approval first. Because in the end, LeBron's opinion is really the only one that matters, and I think that's how they have to handle it. As for LeBron James, his legacy is on the line. I don't know how much you want to talk about this, because if anyone's listening to this, chances are they've heard someone else talk about this, and it's just very it's talked about a lot. If LeBron wins this, it'll be his fourth title. If he loses it, he will be 3-5 in title runs. And the never-ending question of whether he'll catch MJ, which after last year's final seems more real than ever. And if he wins this one, there's going to be plenty of people saying he is better. So I guess where do you stand on this whole debate, and how much do you really care about it?
I think this one probably makes the biggest difference, right? I think this is the most talented team that he's faced in a finals. If he is able to beat a team of probably the two other best players in the league right now, and Curry and Durant, I think that does make a really big difference, at least in my mind, as far as where he stands is in terms of the greats of basketball. You know, there is maybe some to say that he does immediately vault over Michael Jordan if he is able to win this one. But if the question is still, is he better than Michael Jordan, then that probably does point to the fact that he isn't yet better than Michael Jordan. If we can't definitively say it just yet, then we're probably still going to be waiting on another championship.
Right, and I think that's what really makes the conversation interesting. And regardless, I think that if LeBron wins this year, there's going to be people on the LeBron side and people on the MJ side. You're going to have older people who will never really say that anyone is ever better than Michael Jordan unless LeBron does get to 6 rings, because apparently rings the only thing that matter. But just overall, that's just kind of the culture we live in. Yeah,
well, it's certainly part of the argument, right? It has to be. And if LeBron does lose this one, it would be hard for me to kind of even question it anymore. I think that Jordan would certainly still be over him in that case. But if he wins again, I just think that this is a monumental victory for LeBron and his legacy. If this team that I do think is overmatched as far as playing the Warriors, just when you break it down one by one, I'd probably say if based on Kyrie's past finals performances, it's hard to say that he isn't in the top three of the best players in this series, top four of the best players in this series. But really, when they put out that death lineup, it's really, really difficult to stop them, especially when Curry's on his game like he is right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I think the Warriors in terms of best players, if you're gonna draft players in the series, you go LeBron, KD, and then is Steph and Kyrie close because it's the finals and Steph has struggled and Kyrie's really good in the finals?
I mean, that's something that you could probably make the argument for. I struggle to consider past performances as an indication of how someone will play in the future, right? Especially since Steph is as streaky as he is, and if he continues to just roll in the way he does, then really that whole matchup kind of gets diffused, because anything that Kyrie does will just be just matched by Steph.
And then after that, I think the Warriors certainly have the next two best players, Draymond and Klay, and then the Cavs probably have the next two best players after that in Love and Thompson. So we're just splitting hairs here, but if you were to kind of split the teams up.
But then it becomes the question of, if their next two best players are Love and Thompson, not particularly, at least obviously on Thompson's side, really great on as far as three-point shooting goes. That's a whole other ballgame there. Three is greater than two, says most people. So if the Warriors come out and shoot lights out, I can see them quickly just rolling away with the series.
Right. And I think that's why the Cavs built their bench the way they did, is just so that they can kind of come back at the Warriors when that group comes in. Well, even their starters, you have four of the five who can shoot, because LeBron is a good three-point shooter. I know people don't like that idea, but he is. So I think they have built themselves to withstand those kind of shootouts that the Warriors will put them in. Regardless, the Cavs are probably going to get blitzed in like two of these games and lose by 15 or 20, just because that's what the Warriors do. It's just whether you can win those other 4 out of 5 games, which is a very tough task to handle. But the reason that anyone thinks this series is going to be close is because LeBron, and it's going to come down to what he can do. Before we get into predictions and all that jazz, I have a trivia question for you.
Fun.
So there are 11 current or former All-Stars in this finals, the most in 34 years. I want you to try and name all 11 of them. Most of them are obvious, but it's those few on the outskirts.
All right, so let's just do the obvious 7 first. Draymond, Klay, Steph, KD, LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love.
Seven.
Darren Williams.
Who, good one?
Is Richard Jefferson ever made an All-Star game?
To be honest, I actually don't have the list of them. I just had the tweet that said that.
Okay.
So I have to look it up. But I know one that you're missing. I will look up Richard Jefferson while you think about the other two.
Kyle Korver.
Nailed it. There it is. Two more.
It's David West.
That would be my guess as well.
David, I would say David West made one of those All-Star teams when he played with Chris Paul.
I mean, yeah, he was really good. So Richard Jefferson, where are you? He did not.
Oh wow!
Make an NBA All-Star
team.
There
goes my Nets fan history.
Who else could it be? You can pull up the roster page if that would help you.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm going to do right now.
Because I should have been more prepared than this. I apologize. let's see. David West. It does not look like he made an All-Star game.
Does it count that Zaza was voted in?
Was he voted in?
Didn't he? Oh, no, he wasn't voted in.
Yeah, he was just short, because that would have... Yes, it would have counted, though.
Wow. I'm really unsure. I'd say they'd have to come from... The rest of them would have to come from the Warriors.
I mean, because... Well, Iguodala was an All-Star.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There's the 10th.
And then... Livingston, maybe?
I don't think Livingston ever did.
Matt Barnes fought his way into an All-Star game. I don't know where the 11 is coming. Does Tyronn Lue count? Did he ever even make an All-Star team?
Does Tyronn Lue count? I don't think he made an All-Star team.
The 11th.
I don't know. The 11th one's gonna remain. If you are curious like us and you know the 11th All-Star and you're just shouting at your phone or whatever you're listening to this on, you can tweet at us at Coast to Coast Pod and tell us who is that 11th All-Star that we are missing that me on my phone can't find and you can't seem to guess. It could have been Richard Jefferson and David West, and I just missed it, but I don't think so. But oh well, we'll just skim by it because we are obviously incompetent.
There it is.
So is there anything else you want to touch on before we get into predictions and all that jazz?
I think we've covered it pretty well. I think Richard Jefferson has never made an All-Star team. I think when it comes down to it, it is going to be really a battle of the big men. I think we're going to get the expected performances that everyone is predicting out of Durant, out of LeBron and company. So I think it'll really come down to what Kevin Love can do, what Draymond Green is able to do. Can he continue to shoot the way he's shooting? Can he defend and rebound as one expects? That's going to be, I think, the biggest thing in this series. And really, like we mentioned earlier, are the big men of Golden State able to make any sort of impact? Can they play any sort of role? JaVale McGee has played not too poorly on and off. Another thing quickly is just in that last game, obviously it was a blowout, the 126-91 Golden State victory. The bench played a huge role in that game. Iguodala and Livingston came up with 27 points. David West contributed. I think that's also another interesting part to me. Ian Clark obviously could be a big factor if he does get the minutes.
I'm curious to see how deep that bench does go, because I mean, the four starters outside of Zaza and then Livingston and Iguodala will get the bulk of the minutes, but whether we see Ian Clark, whether we see David West is going to be interesting in how they play into this series. And then also on the Cavs side, how many guys do they bring off that bench? Because you'll get some Korver minutes for sure. You'll get some Deron Williams minutes and how he can handle that defensive liability. I don't know. Channing Frye will play. So that's interesting to me. And then the other thing that I don't think I've mentioned yet is I'm curious to see what Tristan Thompson is able to do, because against those death lineups, he can be what kills them, because as good as three beating two can be, two shots is even better than that, I think. And he's really good at kicking out for threes as well. He's smart knowing when to go up and get the easy two, and he's also smart knowing when to kick out to the Cavs shooters who are very good as well. So let's go with series predictions to begin. You can go first.
I'm going to have to say that the Warriors are going to win in six games. I think that they're just going to be too strong. This is, even though it is a team that knows how to win in Golden State, it's a team that knows how to beat Golden State. I just don't think that Cleveland can match the firepower of Golden State in this one. So Golden State in six.
I'm going Warriors in five.
Wow.
I think for me, if they do it in five, I think this might be the best team of all time for a single season, just because they could have gotten the 73 wins if they wanted to. They won 67. Just since they did it last year, they didn't feel the need to, and it really drained their guys, and it may have played a part in last year's finals. But I just think they're really, really good, and I don't think Cleveland's defense is going to be disciplined enough to stop them. Who's your finals MVP?
I think it's going to be Kevin Durant. I could see perhaps KD and Steph kind of splitting in the minds of whoever votes for the finals MVP. And then Draymond maybe winning it. But I do think it'll be Kevin Durant.
I'll go Steph. I think he'll have a good series. He obviously has to have a few outstanding performances, and I think he's capable of it. Although he could get a little drained defensively, because they're going to throw him into every pick and roll imaginable on the other end. But I'll go with Curry. I think that's about it for a finals preview.
I think that does just wrap it up. I'm really excited for this, and hopefully Thursday comes sooner. There is a spelling bee to watch as well, so
the spelling bee is like,
it'll be on ESPN tomorrow. I think.
Ooh,
yeah.
Wow, that's intriguing.
I think
because last year's was unbelievable.
Exactly. So looking for just as good of a performance from all the fifth grade, sixth grade. I don't know how old these kids are.
I don't know. They're all better spellers than I will ever be.
I came in third in a middle school spelling bee once. Rough day for me, but hopefully
that's not bad. I thought I was a good speller, but then I didn't even make it out of like the preliminary rounds, so there it goes. So you can watch the spelling bee coming up soon. You can watch the NBA finals tomorrow. That'll be at I don't know, what is it, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific or something?
I think there's also ones, it's happening right now, it's airing on different things, but they show the final round on ESPN, I think, at 8 p.m. So,
okay, well, we will be watching. We appreciate everyone for listening. We will be back probably pretty soon, I think. I would like to do one after game one or game two, and then also talk about the draft with Thomas, because he's been gearing to talk about that. So I think that'll be a good point. We'll try and get a podcast out after every game or two, because this is really the money time in the year until we get going with the off season. But that'll do it for me and Dante. You can follow us on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod, the number two, not the word. Go check out all the writings on lastwordonprobasketball.com, where we're putting out tons of great finals content. The big roundtable just got put out. And let's go watch some basketball.